Look, you guys are as aware as I am of all that's going on in our world and in our country. And over these last couple of weeks, I feel so undone. I just feel so rattled, so, you know, those times where the rug just kind of gets tugged and you're just left shaken. And I've got some really great friends, by God's grace, back home in Ames. Some leaders in our community, they're African-American, they've been good friends to me and helping me to think rightly and process rightly, and they've been patient with me and helping me, and I invited my friend Turan, who pastors Body of Christ Church in Ames, to come and speak to our staff just this last week. And guys, there just was not a dry eye in the house, and we just entered in together into his story and his perspective and put him in the center of the room, and all of us just prayed over him and he over us. And through all this stuff, I just keep coming back to, I'm rehearsing a lot of the spirituals. And like Jake was saying, this genre of songs comes out of a people who feel very much like they are in exile. They're not where they ought to be. They're not at home, and they're oppressed, and life is crushing them. And yet, because of their faith in God, they just cry out both in anguish and hope, all mixed into the same songs, and they form an important part of our musical heritage and just the ethos. And again, like Jake was saying, the psalm that we're going to look at actually does the same thing, and it allows us to actually feel. That's a Hebrew poetry. Is such a unique and a beautiful art form, and it allows the reader to feel deeply. And as you feel and well up with truths in your heart, then that informs your mind, because sometimes just thinking great thoughts, which is more kind of a Greek thing, more of a New Testament thing, which is important, but in Hebrew poetry, the heart actually informs the mind. We start with a soulish connection, and then that informs the way that we think, and that's what I believe is going to happen. That's what happens in these songs. So, man, thanks to Marcy. But listen to the words. You just heard some of these. She just sang for us. I'm just a poor wayfaring stranger. I'm traveling in this world of woe. Yet there's no sickness, toil, nor danger in that fair land to which I go. I'm going there to see my Father. I'm going there no more to roam. I'm going over Jordan. I'm only going home. So that, you know, that reference to the Jordan. So a lot of the Hebrew poetry that you're reading as you go through the Psalms, sometimes it's the exile in Egypt and the oppression of that. Sometimes it's the exile of Babylon. But either way, the Jordan becomes like that threshold back to where we're supposed to be, back to where everything is home and as it should be. And so that's why through a lot of the spirituals, you're going to have all these references to the Jordan, to Zion, and all this stuff, because they're taking these poems, these songs, and bringing them to life. So it's hard for us to imagine the level of oppression that many have undergone historically and even currently. So we're here in Iowa in 2016. It's hard for us to enter in quite so much. But I just want you to do this thought experiment with me, okay, this morning. Do this thought experiment with me. I want you to, and in fact, let me say this. If you've been watching the news at all about what's been going on in Ankara or Istanbul, very modern cities, kind of first world cities, their experience is a little bit more like what I'm going to ask you to do in your mind. So here we are, Cedar Rapids, and you start hearing rumors about some enemy that's going to come and take over. But honestly, you just think, oh, come on. Like that's ever going to happen. We're so safe. That stuff doesn't happen here, right? So you kind of put that out. But all of a sudden, the rumors start getting more real. And then all of a sudden, just like happened in Istanbul and Ankara, pretty soon fighter jets are flying right over and real low, right over Cedar Rapids. I mean, I want you to imagine this over your home, your downtown, all of a sudden, what's going on? And then you start hearing the rumble. You start hearing some yells. And pretty soon there's a tank and a bunch of military personnel all around that tank. And they're coming down your street. And suddenly you start hearing screams and cries coming from neighborhoods right around you, and it's actually real, and it's happening, and suddenly they're grabbing you, and they're grabbing your family, and you're getting hauled off, and suddenly you find yourself, imagine this, guys, this is a current experience for some people around the world right here today, and suddenly you're getting hauled off thousands of miles away, and you can't believe what has happened. You can't believe that home has been ripped away from you, and there you are. You're a long way. Just think again, guys, this is people in Afghanistan today, people in Syria today, people in Sudan today. This is their experience. They have homes, just like you have home. You have, they have neighbors and family, and they're just hauled off, right? So that experience right there actually fuels some of the Psalms that Jake was referring to. This isn't the one we're going to land in. I just want to read for you Psalm 137, because this actually is the experience of the psalmist in 137. Listen to this. This song came out of that. By the waters of Babylon, there we sat down and we just wept when we remembered Zion. And on the willows there we hung up our lyres. For there our captors required of us songs, and our tormentors mirth, saying, hey, sing us one of the songs of Zion. You know, hey, we heard you people can sing. Give us some of those songs, those happy songs, those songs of mirth, right? Come on. We heard you people can really sing, you know. And I'm not going to sing. This thing's a happy song for you. How should we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? If I forget you, O Jerusalem, let my right hand just forget its skill. Let my tongue stick to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I do not set Jerusalem above my highest joy. Remember, O Lord, against the Edomites, the day of Jerusalem, how they said, lay it bare, down to its foundation. O daughter of Babylon, doomed to be destroyed, blessed shall he be who repays you with what you have done to us. Blessed shall he be who takes your little ones and dashes them against the rock. Guys, that's in your Bible. Okay? That's in your songbook. That's a horrific scene that you just heard. But understand what he said in the verse before, repay them for what they have done to us. Guys, what he's talking about is what he's seen with his own eyes. He's asking for something to happen to those vicious enemies that actually happened before his very eyes. Can you imagine these atrocities? No, we can't hardly. Most of us in this room, we can't. But there are people around the world that would be nodding along with that experience, right? So now I want you to imagine, so that's your experience, the Psalm 137 kind of an experience, but then all of a sudden you hear the story that, well, wait a minute, there's a promise that we're not going to last here forever, that God's going to take us home, and you start remembering these promises that this awful, awful place, this captivity, this exile in Babylon is going to end. And so you remember Jeremiah 29, listen to the promise that came. Thus says the Lord, when 70 years are completed for Babylon, I will visit you, and I will fulfill to you my promise and bring you back to this place. And that word, we've got it, bring you back, is actually this Hebrew word, shuv. It's not a very sexy word, kind of a bland word, but shuv. But it has this idea of restoring, and it's a really important Hebrew word. They're going to cling to this word. I'm going to restore you. 7 years, I'm going to restore you. I'm going to bring you back to this place. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans for welfare, not for evil, to give you a future, to give you hope. And then you'll call upon me and you'll come and pray to me and I'll hear you and you'll seek me and you'll find me when you seek me with all your heart, and I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and I will shuv. I will restore your fortunes and gather you from all the nations and all the places where I've driven you, declares the Lord, and I will shuv. I will bring you back. I will restore you to the place from which I sent you into exile. So guys, now I want you to imagine, keep on that thought experiment, right? So you've been hauled off, and it's atrocious, and it's horrific. It's unimaginable. Your wildest nightmares could not have led you to that scene. But now all of a sudden, this spark of promise and hope, and really, we're going to get back. And then all of a sudden, over the loudspeakers, so now there you are in captivity, over the loudspeakers, all of a sudden, all people from Iowa, you can go home, right? And you're like, what? No, really, yeah, all people from Iowa, there you are, thousands of miles away. All people from Iowa, you can head home now. You're free, right? And so what seemed an unimaginable nightmare is suddenly an unimaginable kind of dream come true, right? Because for all these years, you've been singing these songs of lament, rehearsing even the horrors and trying to cry out for hope, for justice. And now all of a sudden, all that hope and all that dreaming is going to come true. And that takes us to the psalm we're going to look at today. So Psalm 126. Okay, so that's where I want us to look. Psalm 126, very short little psalm. But all that I've been doing to bring you to that point, I hope is going to allow you to grab the words now that are going to be sung over us in Psalm 126. So here's the psalmist that sings the song of that moment. When the Lord restored, shuv, okay, restored, brought, when the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, man, we were like those who dream. Then our mouth was filled with laughter and our tongue with shouts of joy. And they said, even among the nations, man, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. And we are glad. Guys, this is crazy. This is true. This is happening. Have you ever had such really good news, some like shockingly good news, that the most natural response is just to start laughing? You're like, no way. You know, it just kind of starts happening. It'd be like Iowa State fans, you know, if we can break that 3-9 football record. Like, what? No way. You know, like miracles. Woo. You know, like these shouts of joy all of a sudden, right? I mean, just like, could it possibly happen? Yes. Yes. You know, like these just, like you just start laughing. You start giggling. It seems like the most natural thing to do, right? And so miraculous. So unbelievable, miraculous that the psalmist says, even the people around, we're filled with laughter and shouts, even the people around are going, man, the Lord has done great things for them. And I love the understatement there at the last part of that first half. Yeah, the Lord has done great things for us, and we are glad. Just that poetic understatement of just, and we are glad. That Hebrew word glad, it's only used a few times, but it has this idea of, like it happens back in Deuteronomy when they're talking about after harvest comes and you bring in the harvest and you gather all the neighbors and you have this big celebration, harvest is coming. Remember this like at Christmas time or something when you've had a big meal and everybody's there and everything's as it should be. You kind of sit back in your chair and you're just like, this is as it should be. You know, you only have that a handful of times, right, where you're just like, oh man, as it should be. And that's the psalmist is saying, yeah, with shouts of joy, all that, but actually, oh, we are glad. So here's what happens. Okay, back to the thought experiment. You're far away, you get the word, go back. So, okay, everybody on the trains, heading back to Iowa, right? So you get on the trains, and on the train, you're starting to talk to your neighbors again and dreaming about what it's going to be like, right? Man, I wonder if the corn is tall and green. Man, by this point, I bet that corn's really tall and the beans are red, you know, just, oh, I can't wait to see how green Iowa is in this time, right? And then you're thinking, man, remember Iowa State's campus, so beautiful, and those sprawling lawns, I can't wait to go back and see. I wonder if Lancelot and Elaine are still in the pond, you Iowa State fans. Wonder if they're still there, you know, and I wonder, man, remember our house, remember that, man, I can't wait to get, I wonder if that swing is still on the back porch. Remember, how much time have we spent on that back porch? I can't wait. Oh, we're going home, you know. So all of a sudden you get there and they stop the train. You get off the train. You're kind of looking around. You're like, man, something's not right. What? You start making your way toward your home and you come around the corner and suddenly, man, there's no shouts of joy. In fact, you're just shocked. You're stunned. Because, guys, there's no manicured lawns. There's no well-kept neighborhoods. A band of marauders has taken over your town while you've been gone. They've taken over everything, and they've left your fields. They're not going to plant anything. So for all these years, nothing's been planted. Everything's overgrown. Everything's taken over. Your own house, if there is a house left, somebody else is living there. You have to chase off these people who are in your house. Then you get in their house, and you know what? For years, they've been vandalizing it and taking no care of it at all. And it's just a wreck. And the reality just sets in. Like, what happened? There's no grocery store to go get food, and there's no Lowe's to go get the supplies you need to fix everything. And there's no Starbucks to get something while you're waiting. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that's when reality hits, right? What No Starbucks. That's what I'm telling you. Nothing about the way home was home before. It's gone. Okay? It's gone. Which brings us to the second half of the psalm, because this was the experience. When they got to go back, they started off with shouts of joy, expectation, right? And then reality hits. Look at the second half of Psalm 126. Restore, there's that shuv, restore our fortunes, O Lord, like streams in the Negev. Those who sow in tears shall reap with shouts of joy. He who goes out weeping, bearing the seed for sowing, shall come with shouts of joy, bringing his sheaves with him. But it begins with that prayer, verse 4, restore. This time not, hey, the Lord is restored. Now it's a cry, it's a prayer. Restore our fortunes, O Lord, like the streams in the Negev. Why does he make reference to the streams in the Negev? Here's why, guys. Because there are no streams in the Negev. Okay? I've got a picture to show you what the Negev looks like. Okay, guys? That's the Negev. When he says, restore our fortunes, O Lord, like the streams of the Negev, this is where they're going to have to walk through to get back from Babylon, to get back to home, to get to the journey. They're going to walk through this arid place. But once a year, this miraculous thing happens. So the rains come about once a year in their winter, and overnight this thing gets transformed. So I want to show you another picture of what places in the Negev look like. Like overnight. Okay, this is like go on Discovery, go check this out. This is amazing. This is kind of a global phenomenon. So the land just can't take the water that comes finally torrentially down. So all the water kind of runs into these wadis. There's like five or so in all of that huge desert where all the water just kind of whoosh, goes down into these wadis. And there are these seeds of life that one time just burst into life. And so it's just transformed. And so the streams in the Negev go from zero, like there are no streams because you can't see them anywhere, to bam, and this all just bursts into life. And then as soon as the rains are gone, it all just dies again and goes back to just being desert. Okay? Guys, it's miraculous. It's phenomenal. And that's what the psalmist is praying about, right? He's saying, Lord, the way that you can just miraculously just burst things into life. Lord, we're looking at a wilderness here. Like everything's abandoned. Everything's awful. Everything's falling apart. God, we need a miracle, okay? We need a miracle of restoration to come in. We don't need just, you know, a nice little shower. We need a miraculous transformation. We need life. We need a miracle. We need shuv. We need a restoration. Bring it back. Bring it back. And then the last couple of verses, he actually changes imagery yet again. Isn't the Hebrew poetry just layered with this imagery? He changes the imagery again. So he says, those who sow in tears shall reap with shouts of joy. And he goes out weeping, bearing seed for sowing, but coming back with shouts of joy, bringing his sheaves with him. So now the imagery goes to a desperate mother or father or both. And they're going out into that ground that's, how many gardeners? Any gardeners here? We have no gardeners. Do you not garden? And say, okay, fair, there you go. So you know what that's like if you just ignore your garden for a while? What happens, right? I mean, that's why there are very few hands up, frankly, right now. Easier to go to Hy-Vee. But, okay, now think about neglecting gardens and fields year after year after year. Okay, so now, you're the mother and father. You're back. Trying to make this home again. Guys, you have one bag of seed. And you got this decision to make. So I could take this seed and I could grind it up and make enough meal to sustain my family for as long as that will last, and then we're going to die. Or, hope against hope, I could go out that field and start working it. And as soon as that ground is ready, I start taking that precious, precious seed. And one by one, I start dropping those into the ground. And every seed gets watered with my tears because I am hoping and I am praying and I am desperate. God, you got to make this grow. Like the streams in the Negev, I don't see it right now. God, you got to pull off a miracle. You got to bring a shuv, a restoration. God, please. And so you go and you weep and then you wait and you wait and you hope and you pray and you cry and you weep and you do, and then suddenly it starts growing. And whoa, look at that, there's a little green, right? And then pretty soon it starts growing and growing, and then the harvest comes, and that's what he's describing. You go out and you're crying and you're praying and you're weeping and you're planting, and then the harvest comes, and then, oh yes, and then those shouts of joy come back, right? We reap with shouts of joy, and we come home with shouts of joy, and we got sheaves, and we're happy in him, and all is as it should be, and promises fulfilled and hopes fulfilled, and all is exactly as it ought to be. And so we're singing and we're shouting, and all is better, and God has stepped in. So now, here's the question for you guys. You've been so attentive and so good as you've been thinking about it. Now I want you to imagine this. Why did God leave this psalm in our Bibles? Right? So you got to ask yourself, why did God, if he was going to put something in written form for us to have, leave such a psalm that seems so far from our experience? What are we to gain in Iowa in 2016 by reading through something like that that just seems so distant from our experience? What are we to gain? Why do we read that? Why do we study it? I think there's at least just a couple of reasons, guys, and I want you to imagine these with me. The first, I think, is a really important one. Well, they're both important, otherwise I wouldn't. Anyway, but the first one, because I think it's important that we enter into the experience of the global church, of the capital C church. Because here's what happens. Sometimes you guys, you're about to get into a new home, and that's exciting, all sorts of cool things going on right here. God's, man, even back in Ames, we're hearing the stories of what God's doing here, and man, we're excited about your church and what's going on. It's unbelievable, right? So you can get, there's so much going on right here, it's easy to just get fixed right here. But all of a sudden, guys, we got to lift up our head from our little part of the field and recognize our part of the field is one small, tiny fraction of the bigger, capital F, field of God, global. And we got to enter into the experience of God's people all around this world. And guys, there are people around the world that read this psalm, and they're crying right along because they're like, that's their story right there. They're singing this. This is their story. There are refugees, guys, just one quick illustration of that. So we've been blessed. We're going to start a church in Des Moines this coming fall in the Drake University area. God's gone way before us. It's unbelievable. One of the things we're blessed to find is a building. We never thought it'd be audacious to start by building a building even before, or having a building before we even started a church. But what happened was my niece lives right around the corner from this big 100-year-old abandoned Presbyterian church, okay? And every time I drive by there, I think, oh, God, it just looks abandoned, and why is there no life, you know? And chiseled in limestone above the threshold of it says, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free, right? And I'm like, oh, the gospel used to go off. So anyway, so I said to the guy that's going to be planting the church, his name is Andy. I said, Andy, just go find out if we can just use that building once a week, you know? The day that he goes to inquire about that is the day that they've decided to sell it, okay? And when they found out that it was a church that was actually interested, they dramatically lowered the price. We ended up getting a grant for almost all that. I mean, this whole thing has just been one miracle after another. But here's why these even secular non-Christian people decided that it was important to sell this thing to a church. Because they didn't want it blown down, because it probably would have been. You know, it's a perfect place for a come and go or whatever. But when they found out there was a church, here's why. The only people still worshiping in that church building are Sudanese refugees. Everybody else had long since abandoned the Sudanese. So they've come because they're Christians. And the church in Sudan is being crushed. And some of them have been able to escape. And thousands have been able to make their way to Des Moines. And this has become their home. This has become their hub. You guys should hear the songs of the Sudanese. Okay? You should hear the songs of deliverance from the Sudanese, and now we could share a home with them. Is that unbelievable? It's unbelievable what God's doing, okay? But here's it. Yeah, you can clap for that. I agree. It's God doing that, all that. But then even these current troubles in our own land, okay? So I'm talking to my friend Taran, Carlos, and Anthony, and they're helping me to understand. So now I'm going through the spiritual, but I also started going back and re-listening to some of the songs of the civil rights movement. And this song this expression came through again. So this awesome song, you probably heard it because it's been done and redone a bunch of times, but Curtis Mayfield, who's one of the key songwriters for that time, wrote the song People Get Ready. Even Rod Stewart did that, and I'm sorry about that. But anyway, that's on my generation, honestly. That's on me. But Curtis Mayfield, listen to this, guys. People get ready. There's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage. You just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. Don't need no ticket. You just thank the Lord. People get ready for the train to Jordan, picking up passengers from coast to coast. Faith is the key. Open the doors and board them. There's room for all among the loved the most. Just hope. I don't see it now. I feel the oppression. That's all I can see. There's hope. God, step in. God, bring restoration. Here's what I'm saying. Guys, we need to enter into the experience of people who this day, and not just a long way in your neighborhood, in your city, are singing songs of deliverance, and we need to enter in. We need to enter in. But the other reason it's important for us to enter into these psalms is because, guys, it's a shadow. This psalm is just a shadow of a much greater story going on, a capital S story that's going to start in Genesis and go all the way to Revelation. So, guys, the reality is all of us are born into exile. All of us are born into the slavery of sin. All of us are born away from home. And even the most adamant unbelievers have this haunting feeling like this is not the way it ought to be, right? Things are not right. All you have to do is turn on the news. People are saying, people who never have opened this book are asking the same questions you are. What's wrong with this world, right? Just this last week, I got a chance to go to this meeting where this atheist group in Ames actually, in wanting to ask these questions, called my friend Turan and asked, can we meet in your church so that we can think about what's going on in this world? Is that crazy, right? So Tran called me. He's going, hey, do you want to come? I'm, absolutely. You know, so the two of us are there. And at one point, I'm holding hands with Tran up front. He's asking me to pray for what's going on. And I look up because the guy who's leading this atheist association is actually a friend of mine. Of all my unbelieving friends in my life, he's the most hostile and antagonistic to the gospel friend I've ever had. We went on this fishing trip. I mean, you should have been a fly on the wall, man, as just, you know, gospel and unbelief collide. So, but I'm able here in the same room holding hands with probably the most godly man I've ever met in my life, and then looking out at a guy that I have has refused the gospel even from my own lips. And there we are in the same room asking the same questions, right? Church, it's time for the church to be the church in these days because we actually have answers for some of this stuff, right? Because even unbelievers are saying, what is wrong with this world? This isn't the way things ought to be. Well, compared to what? If you don't believe this book, right? Compared to what? Why is that in your soul? Why in your heart do you know there's a better way and a better place? I'll tell you why. And maybe you're here today. I want to tell you why. Because God wrote that story in your heart and your soul. You know it to be true before you ever open this book. And then you open this book and you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's like the story I've been thinking about. That's the story I keep reading in novels. That's the story I keep seeing played out in movies. That's the same. There's this storyline going through every culture that says, this isn't right. I'm made for something else. I feel like I'm not home. And so we pick up the book, right? We pick up the book and we start reading through, and all of a sudden we read, oh man, there's a father out there. A father who longs for us to come home. That's part of the storyline. Like, yeah, that's right. And then we keep reading the story and we find out that the father loved us so much that he sent his only true son to come on a rescue mission, to come for us. But when he found us, you know what he found? Not only were we exiles, but we kind of liked it there. We were in our exile, and actually we were taking on a lot of that exile kind of life. And actually we kind of liked the darkness rather than the light that he brought. At that point, what did the son say? Did he just say, okay, you want it that way? Just go. No, you know what he said? Even while we were still in our disobedience and rebellion and loving the darkness that we had created, Christ laid down his life for you and for me. And I'm reading this story. And then he says this. He says, I loved you so much, I'd give my life for you. In fact, I'll give my life for you. I'll conquer death for you. And tell you what, you stay here. I'm going to go prepare a place for you. Because you're right, this isn't home. But I'm going to go build your home. And I'm going to come back and get you and take you to that place. And I'm going to wipe away, I'm going to wipe away every tear. I'm going to take everything that's undone and do it right. Everything that's upside down, I'm going to turn it right side up. And all that is ravaged and vandalized, shuv, restored, brought back. Jesus looks at us and he says, you're free. I know you've been slaves. You're free. And I'm going to come get you because you're going home. Is this a dream? Guys, here's what I'm telling you. You open Psalm 126. When the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. Here's what I'm telling you. It's no dream. Jesus has an awesome story. And he wants to pull you into the center of that story. And you want to be home. I want to be home. And he can take us there. In fact, that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be celebrating communion here in a little bit. You know what that is? That's our opportunity to get a taste of home. That's a taste of the future meal. We're going to share together. It's a reminder of what Jesus has done to take us home. Guys, it's time for the church to be the church, to rehearse this song, rehearse this story, not just to sing it here. We are going to sing it here. We have to sing it here, but then we go and we sing it in our neighborhoods, in our places of work, and to places where injustice reigns. Let's tell the story of home. Will you pray with me? Let's pray. Jesus, the psalmist says that you start doing such incredible things for your people that even the people around, even the nations around just start kind of stepping back and say, wow, God has done great things for them. And we are here to say to you, Lord, you have done great things for us and we are glad. God, teach us the songs of deliverance. Teach us to give shouts of joy. Fill our hearts and our souls with laughter and song. You've done great things for us. And we worship you. In the name of Christ we pray.